Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. My name is Darren Fote, and today we are podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
It's a pleasure to be here. I wanted to start by thanking the Tattered Cover for having me. It's an honor to be at such a fantastic independent bookstore. And to thank you all so much for coming. Tonight, I'm going to read a little bit from Cart Boy Goes to Camp, about a chapter and a half. And then after that, if anybody has any questions about anything about the book or the character or writing or publishing books, we can have a question and answer session. So, as most of you know who read Cart Boy and the Time Capsule, the first book in the series, the main character, Hal, had a pretty hard time in sixth grade. And he is really, really looking forward to summer. He barely made it through sixth grade, and he's looking forward to relaxing and sleeping late and hanging out with his best friend, Arnie. But Hal's dad, being Hal's dad, has different plans for Hal for the summer. So I'm going to read chapter one when Hal's dad tells Hal exactly what's going to happen. And I'm going to be showing you some of the pictures that appear throughout the book. It'll be a little bit hard to see them in the back, but I'll just show a few and sort of explain what they are as we go along. Dear person or alien who lives way in the future, hello, greetings, Zimnet Snurg. It's me, Hal. The first thing I want to say is, sorry to bug you again. I'm sure you have better things to do, like play soccer on Jupiter or visit your robot cousins on Mars. But based on what happened today, I had to talk to someone, and I figured the best someone was you. Especially since I wrote to you all last year in my time capsule journal for Mr. Tupkin's history class. Yes, I am still recovering. I'm also hoping you have the means, a real working time machine, and the power, alien awesomeness, to beam me out of here. Based on what happened today with my dad, I'm more desperate now than ever. It all started when my best friend, Arnie Gianelli, came over to my house. It was the first day of summer, and we had big plans to get to level 15 of Raven Cave. We didn't want to waste a minute. So we sat down in the room I share with my twin sisters, Bee and Perry, and turned on the computer. We had just started playing when my dad's voice came from the living room. Hal, I need to speak with you, he said. As soon as I heard him, I did what any sensible kid would do, covered my ears with a stuffed animal. This time I used Flatso the hippo, who I found in Bee's crib. I wrapped Flatso over my head and pressed down hard. Whatever my dad had to say, I was pretty sure I didn't want to hear it. Partly because of the suspicious-looking piece of paper I saw in his pocket right before Arnie came over, and partly because summer was finally here, and like I mentioned before, Arnie and I had important goals to achieve. Noon, wake up. 12:30, eat donuts. 12:40, get to level 15. As it turns out, holding a stuffed animal over my ears was about as useful as holding a handful of air. Hal, get in here now. I put Flatso back in the crib and dragged myself into the living room. My dad was sitting on our worn-out couch wearing one of his Revolutionary War uniforms. He had just come from reenacting a battle down by the town tennis courts, so he had a rip in his jacket and about five missing buttons. Rough skirmish today, Dad? We were badly outnumbered by the British. I took a bayonet to the ribs. And here's a picture of ketchup, which is the blood that Hal's dad uses during the battles. Sorry to hear you lost the fight, Dad. Better luck next time. I started to make a beeline back to Raven Cave, but I didn't get far. Sit, said my dad. I sat. I've learned that when my dad says to sit, you should probably do it, unless you want to end up raking leaves for 5 hours on a Saturday. I could tell he was going to get down to the real reason he wanted to talk to me, and that it was much bigger than telling me about a battle he just lost. My dad shifted around for what felt like 9 hours, then finally his lips started to move. Hal, now that you're 12, I think it's time for you to look at summer differently, to expand your horizons. It's time for you to get out of Stouffville, Pennsylvania. You mean like go to Grandpa Jansen's for a couple of days? That I could handle. Grandpa Jansen has a giant gumball machine in his basement, and you don't even have to use a quarter to get one out. No, not Grandpa Jansen, said my dad. I'm talking about really getting away from Stouffville, having an experience. Your mom and I have decided to send you to sleepaway camp this summer. Sleepaway camp? The only summer camp I'd ever been to was the Tiny Wishes Day Camp near the bowling alley downtown. Tiny Wishes was made up of a diverse mix of children, 99% little kids and me. I'm pretty sure I was the only person in the pool who didn't wear swim diapers. And here's a picture of a swim diaper, which Hal says, the percentage of pee a swim diaper prevents from going into a pool, zero. I looked my dad in the eyes. You mean you and Mom are sending me to a real summer camp? One that has cabins and sports? Exactly. Nature? Uh-huh. Kids over the age of 4? Yes. Oh, sounds like I'll be needing a skateboard and a tennis racket and some new basketball sneakers. I think they're having a sale over at Denby's. I'll meet you in the car. Hold on. Okay, maybe just a skateboard and the sneakers. Hal, you won't be needing any of that fancy new stuff. This is a special camp, a different kind of place. Okay, I thought, that could still mean it wasn't bad. There would probably still be lots of s'mores. Just as I was picturing the marshmallow goo melting all over my tongue, my dad slid a piece of paper toward me. I picked it up and saw it was a brochure for a place called Camp Jamestown. Judging by the trees and the pond on the cover, it didn't seem so bad. Then I took a closer look. Standing by a log cabin was an old guy with a beard that came to a sharp point at the end. And here, Hal says, only two kinds of people wear sharp, pointy beards. Guys who like colonial times and guitarists for ultra-death. Exactly what kind of camp is this, Dad? The best camp in the world, that's what kind. You get to live like a real pioneer. My dad started flipping through the brochure, pointing to pictures of pine trees and cabins and outhouses. Hardly anything has changed at Camp Jamestown since the 1600s. It's woodsy and rustic, and there's wildlife everywhere. One time I even saw a bear. Dad, I said, wiping a gob of sweat off my forehead, I so appreciate your kind offer, but for the sake of our family and the meager to non-existent funds you earn from fixing appliances for a living, I will generously decline. For you and Mom and the twins, I'll stay home. With that, I attempted to walk away. Nice try, mister. Get back here. I turned back, and that's when I noticed the humongous bag on the floor. It was open on one end, and a spider the size of a hockey puck crawled out. Shoo, said my dad, waving away the spider. Guess he couldn't resist making a home out of this beauty. The beauty was a mold-covered army green duffel bag my dad had somehow dragged up from the basement. This was my pack when I went to Camp Jamestown, and before that, it was Grandpa Jansen's army bag. Check it out, it's filled with supplies. My dad reached inside the bag and started pulling stuff out. Ah, yes, the old canteen, my trusty shovel, bow and arrow, axe, sewing kit. Ooh, my yarn spindle. Sewing kit, yarn spindle? These precious heirlooms helped me win Pioneer Day. Look at the beadwork on this fabric. I made a bald eagle, very sacred to the Powhatan Indians, but you'll learn all about that starting tomorrow. Tomorrow? The bus leaves first thing in the morning. My dad went over the checklist of stuff every camper was supposed to bring. Good thing I saved almost everything on the list, he said. No frivolous shopping for us. I stared at all the precious heirlooms and couldn't help but think, here we go again. It wasn't enough that my dad made me carry my books to school in an old lady cart for most of sixth grade. Now he was going to make me be the weird kid at camp, too. The kid with stuff his dad thinks is priceless, but everyone else knows is junk. Even the sleeping bag was full of holes. Dad, I said as a last-ditch effort, this duffel bag is way too heavy for me. Remember what you said about bad backs running in the family? I've already thought of that. You can carry the bag in your cart. And here's a picture of the cart, and it says, the reason everyone calls me cart boy. I looked down at the duffel bag by my feet and couldn't help but wish there was something else inside it. Not a shovel or a bow and arrow or a yarn spindle, but a molecular modifier, like the kind I saw on the TV show Gadgets of the Future. It transports you anywhere in time you want to go. They said everyone in the distant future will have one, which brings me to the question I always seem to be asking you. You don't have one handy, do you? And so this is the start of Cartboy Goes to Camp. And I'm just going to read one more part of a chapter about what happens right after Hal gets to camp. Because when he first gets there, he gets off the bus and he says, you know, maybe this isn't so bad. It's leaky lean-tos and it's outhouses, but I can survive the summer here. I mean, after all, at least I don't have to be near the biggest bully in my school, Ryan Horner. Until he turns around and guess who's at the camp. And so I'm just going to read the little part about when he first sees Ryan Horner, and then we can talk about that. Okay. Dear alien who I'm praying can get me out of here. I tried to back up, to take tiny steps away from Ryan Horner, but I didn't get far. My back bumped into a knotty pine tree right behind me. Where do you think you're going, cart boy? I'll tell you where you're going. You're going to listen to me, and you're going to listen good. I turned my ears toward Ryan and squinted my eyes half-closed, as if somehow that would help. The only reason I'm at this dump is because of you, because you were the one who told on me for cheating on the history test. I thought about telling Ryan how it wasn't me who told on him, how the only reason I was talking with Mr. Tupkin at the end of the year was to find out my history grade. But then I remember what he gave me last year, the sweatpants wedgie. I don't know if you can see that, but it's pretty uncomfortable. My mouth stayed shut. Ryan leaned in so close to me I could feel his breath on my face. My parents sent me to this camp as punishment, so what I'm going to do is punish you. You will be my personal slave. You will do whatever I tell you to do the whole time we're here. Won't people think it's weird that I'm your slave? As far as you're concerned, cart boy, I have a twisted ankle. I'll need to rest the whole time in that hammock by my cabin. He pointed to a run-down-looking cabin at the edge of camp, near some dark and creepy woods. Behind the cabin, a hammock was tied between two trees. The sun was starting to set, and the tree branches cast so many black shadows over the hammock, it looked like a horror movie. "One last thing," said Ryan, pulling my collar up to my chin. "If you tell anyone, I'll give you another wedgie, and this time your underwear's gonna come out your ears." Ryan loosened his grip on my collar, and I took that as a sign to get out of there fast. I ran all the way to cabin two without stopping once. Even though I was shaking like a wet poodle, and my old lady cart was squeaking behind me the entire way. And here is what the chipmunk thinks of that. Weird. Okay, so that is sort of, you can sort of see what Hal is going to have to face this summer. And a lot, much like in the first book, he's in a place where he has to learn history. And even though he doesn't want to in the beginning, he finds out in the history lessons that not only can he learn something that he can use in current times, that maybe he can figure out how to get along with his dad and stand up to the bully and fix everything he needs to do to get back on track for summer. So thank you so much. And if anybody has any questions, that would be great.
How long did it take you to write book one and then book two?
How long did it take to write book one and book two? They each took about a year to write, and then about 6 months to ultimately get published. So once the editor buys your book, there's a lot of writing and rewriting involved until finally they release it. So it's really about 18 months per book. It seems like a long time for this, but it's a lot of work, yeah. Well, this book came out in June, so it's been finished as in, you know, available in the bookstores for, yeah, recently. And the one before that came out last year. Yeah?
What was your inspiration for the first?
My inspiration is here tonight. Would you like to stand up, Bo McKenzie? yay. So that is my son, but there are a lot of things that inspired me. But Bo was a good reader, but I'd say when he was about the main character's age, he gravitated away from books, and I noticed the things he liked were more comic books and humor. He loved Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and I was just so happy at that point to see him keeping a book that I liked the idea of doing something funny, silly with visuals, but also with a story and hopefully even a history lesson in it that would keep kids like Bo reading, and also be entertaining. Yes?
How'd you come up with all the names?
How'd I come up with the names? Well, you know, the thinking of the names is a fun and interesting process, and there are no rules, but I'll tell you one thing I liked about Hal is that, to me, I liked that it was short and easy, and it sounded like Pal a little bit, because I think Hal would be a nice friend, and I just thought Hal was a friendly name. Ryan Horner seemed a little bit, I think maybe I went to high school with somebody whose name was similar to Ryan Horner's, who wasn't that nice, possibly. And yeah, so you just kind of write what feels right.
Mm-hmm. I'm really interested in this, the writing process, how you have an idea that you love and then you create something and then it goes to an editor.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that and just how you sort of sort through the rewrite?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, everybody has a different approach, obviously, and the main thing that I've learned is not to rush and to really take time on the outline, and trust that the jokes will come, and to know your characters and to work on the characters' backstory, because the better you know them and the tighter your outline, you can always change anything. But I read something once that said the characters will tell you what to do. They will talk to you, and I was like, I am sure that's going to happen. That's not going. But the more you know them and the more you work on your outline, it will all come. So that for me is part of the process. And then I would say the main thing is that when an editor buys your book, be prepared to make a lot of changes and not be too attached to anything. And I trust it. There may be authors who really don't want to change much and may not have to, but I trusted my editor. I thought she was smart, and I think together we had a good collaboration. So writing is rewriting, and there's no way to get around that. Does that answer the question? Or okay.
How many times did you rewrite the opening three pages?
Oh, 300.
Why did you have to rewrite? Why did you feel you needed to rewrite them?
Because I would say if there's one part of the book that needs to be perfect, I mean, it has so many jobs to do. You have to start to care about the character immediately and want to know what happens to him and set the scene and feel different so that somebody doesn't say, I've read this before, that the more that can happen in the first three pages, the more you're on your way. And it's just honing it and honing it and finding the voice of the character. Once you have that in the beginning, then you have it, but you really need to get it up front.
And also about the marriage of the writing with the illustrations, and how did you participate in the process of the density of illustrations?
Okay. Well, even though this book is full of illustrations, I don't consider myself a great artist, somebody who can draw very well. But it was convenient to me that the character right up front says, hi, I'm a 12-year-old boy and I can't draw, because that allowed me to draw a cat, you know, in a simple way. And it was a gift to be able to just illustrate things loosely without having to try too hard. I was inspired by Diary of a Wimpy Kid. I love how, even though this has sort of more of a plot in the story, I loved how he had genuine humor with the story and the drawings, and I like all books, and I see how much boys and girls his age love love how the illustrations sort of draw them in. It was an opportunity for jokes. And I think that I've had many teachers over the last 2 years come up to me and say that they have a kid who is a late reader or having trouble. I had one woman to say her student started reading in fifth grade and that he found a way in with this book. And so I was so grateful to hear that at least the illustrations can work in that sense. I will definitely write another book. I'm not sure there's going to be another Cartboy, but I'm thinking of another series with a whole different character, so stay tuned.
Laura,
yeah?
You did the illustrations as you go along?
I do, yeah. Yeah, I do. The only one I didn't do was this one of Hal, which the publisher does the cover design. But, yeah, I do it as I go along. And I think they were quite happy that I do the illustrations because they didn't have to pay someone else. It was all in one package. Okay, I guess that's it.
Would you like to sign some books?
Yes.
Okay, thank you so much.
That's all for tonight's Author on Tour. I'm Darren Fote, and we have been podcasting live from the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Stay pod-tuned in the coming weeks as we podcast Authors on Tour.